Wallawani, welcome to Earth Matters, environment social justice stories from Australia and around the world, produced at the studios of 3CR on Wurundjeri country in Naam, Melbourne, and broadcast across this continent via the Community Radio Network. I'm your show host, Beck Horridge, and I do pay respects to the elders, past, present, and emerging. Today's show was made in Gadigal, Sydney, on Wangal country, the lands of the people of the Eora Nations.
Here with Angelica Mantikas, who's working with Market Forces, the movement that shifts investments away from dirty fossil fuel. Angelica, let's get right into it. Tell us about your campaign for APA Group to end its pipelines enabling Beetaloo gas fracking.
Hi, Rebecca. Thanks so much for having me. It's a real pleasure. I'm sure most people probably haven't even heard of APA Group. It's a bit of a niche company. They fly quite under the radar. They're not like a bigger fossil fuel type company you may have heard of in the past, like Woodside or BHP or anything like that. You know, for context, APA is Australia's biggest pipeline company and kind of Australia's main one too. They build a lot of the infrastructure pipelines that actually transport most of this fossil gas to export hubs and as well as to other areas in Australia. What we're pushing for and the reason why we've decided to really focus on APA is because there's this area up in the Northern Territory called the Beetaloo Basin, and it's this really beautiful, pristine area where it's really hot for half the year and very tropical and wet the other half of the year. And there's these beautiful landscapes, arid landscapes, but also lots of special springs. I don't know if you've heard of like Mataranka Springs. And the Northern Territory actually relies on groundwater for that 6 months of the year where it doesn't rain. At the moment, there are a few companies up in the Northern Territory that are trying to unlock this area called the Beetaloo Basin, drill through the ground and do something called fracking. And fracking is essentially where they pump lots of water and toxic chemicals at really high speeds down into the ground to break up this rock and get gas to come up. That's hydraulic fracturing, or fracking as we call it. And in doing that, there are enormous risks that are posed to the environment, to communities around that area, as well as obviously to our climate that comes from burning this gas. Gas is a fossil fuel and it produces methane, which is one of the most significant greenhouse gases. Yeah, our campaign here is really focusing on APA as the key enabler of fracking. So they're working with two companies, Beetaloo Energy, which was formerly called Empire Energy, and Tamboran Resources. So those two companies are the main ones doing that fracking process. And APA are the key enablers in the sense of they're the ones who are going to build these massive pipelines that enable that gas to get moved. If there are no pipelines built and there's no demand, then there's no need for that fracking to happen in the first place. So our campaign is really trying to raise awareness of the risks associated with fracking and raise the questions of whether we even need these large-scale pipelines, whether we need this gas, because the reality is a significant majority of it is destined for export anyway. And we're essentially putting communities at risk here to export this gas. So it's not even like the benefits are going to flow back to communities or to Australians.
What are your main concerns about APA's big gas pipeline?
Yeah, there are quite a few. APA's potentially trying to build a couple different pipelines, but the main concern is that these pipelines will enable significant amounts of gas to be exported. And once these pipelines are built, it could mean that potentially thousands of fracking wells are built across the Beetaloo Basin. So right now, they're still in that exploration phase. These small fracking companies that APA is working with are just trying to prove up that there is gas under there, that it's commercial, that it makes sense. These kind of cowboy actors, they're quite small fracking companies. One of them's from the US and the other one operated as well in the US. And they're kind of just trying to prove up that this gas is there. And then APA is going to transport that gas and it will be burned. One of the main concerns is the climate impact. So we're talking about all the gas from the Beetaloo Basin, if burnt could produce over 1 billion tons of greenhouse gas emissions. 1 billion tons. It's even hard to quantify or compute what that looks like. We know coal power is bad. If you think of it in the context of Australia's dirtiest coal power plant, if that ran for 70 years, that is the equivalent of like the emissions from this project. It's a really dangerous project from a climate perspective. And then if you even take away the climate aspect, right? We're talking about areas, like I said, that are really dry for half of the year. And that's not even taking into account ever worsening heat waves and weather extremes that are happening in the Beetaloo Basin from the climate crisis that is being caused by this exact type of fossil fuel burning and exploration. So when you take that into account, that obviously communities are going to need, they're going to need water. Communities are going to need all sorts of things which are being put at risk by the fracking process itself, because there are risks associated when you're injecting heaps of toxic chemicals into the ground. There are many risks that are being put to the very water resources and that groundwater, entire aquifers that communities rely on up there. And we've already seen leaks happen of the fracking wastewater. Empire, one of Beetaloo Energy APA's partner company, already leaked toxic wastewater. This is one of the exploratory sites. And we actually brought that contaminated soil from that leak straight to APA Group annual meeting to raise that directly with the board, because it's frankly unacceptable for communities to have to deal with this while these big companies get away with making lavish profits and then run away, leaving communities to deal with the impacts at the end of the day.
Well, we've had elders from the Beetaloo area on Earth Matters before, so we've known from some time that there's been a lot of community concern about APA and its gas pipelines. And now we hear this about the toxic fill. Well, what's the reality about what's going on in the Beetaloo Basin in the Northern Territory?
The reality is that these companies are going in and risking the livelihoods of communities and risking the livelihoods of all Australians, really, when we talk about the climate risk that this will pose. They are going ahead with these projects without even having communities on board. There are so many layers to this, right? You've got that climate risk enabling over 1 billion tons of emissions. For context, more than Australia's 2021 annual emissions. So it's just this one project alone, more than all of Australia's total emissions. And once you build these pipelines, you are locking those emissions in for decades. So these pipelines are set to run until 2070. I would really love to know if the communities are made aware of whether those pipelines are being locked in for that long, of how long their land is going to be used for fracking, and even the processes around how consent is obtained. There are a lot of questions around all of these things, around the actions of these actors, around the impacts on farmers, the impacts on landholders, all sorts of things that I think need to be cleared up and need to be understood well before any of these projects go ahead. If you fully understand how the underground aquifer works and connects and what the different pressure points are, then you can map out and understand, okay, like we're not going to go here and this is dangerous here, and you understand those risks. The problem is that isn't happening. The testing isn't happening. Independent scientists aren't being allowed up there to survey and see, you know, they're not being allowed to actually get that data and get that information.
You've given us a lot of reasons. And are there any more why you and your communities are concerned about what's happening with the fracking in the Northern Territory?
I think we also just want to see more transparency from these actors. We want more independent scientists to be let in. We want communities to be made aware of all the risks that are posed by fracking being let into their communities. And yeah, there are so many impacts on businesses, impacts on farmers. This isn't just some, you know, greeny environmentalist hippies that are raising a warning flag. This is a risk to everyone. And I think we all ought to be made aware of that.
I've seen the promotion video of this Tamboran executive talking from Houston.
Yeah. These CEOs are making decisions in boardrooms in big cities, so far distanced from the impacts of the communities that their operations are running in. right? They're not going to have to deal with the impacts on water 30 years from now when we're in the midst of a climate crisis and we've got hot summers and it's harder to find water, and the water that does exist potentially is not safe to drink. We don't know about that for sure right now, but it is a risk.
I just find it hard to really trust that it's not all about making money, because clearly there's a bundle of money to be made. But really, that's the motive. I mean, I have sympathy for the Northern Territory government. It doesn't have much money and it has a lot of expenses. But surely there's a way without potential damage and such a sort of top-down approach, in my view.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are so many alternatives, right? We live in one of the best countries in the world for renewable energy, for solar, for wind power, and yet we're one of the biggest fossil fuel exporters in the world. And that's the reality, right? Most of this gas gets exported because that's where the profits are. They don't make as much money selling to domestic consumers. They make their money mostly through liquid natural gas exports.
I had a look at the website of APA and it says in their promotions that these gas companies are helping us with energy security. That's what they say. And because they argue gas is needed in coming years and in the transition to clean and renewable energy. This old chestnut.
Yeah, it's a typical like gas industry, fossil fuel industry line of, you know, we're going to use gas as a transition fuel. We're going to use that to help us get off fossil fuels. Well, you can't use a fossil fuel to help you get off fossil fuels, especially now. Renewables are the cheapest energy source, right? If we're not doing it now, then when are we going to do it? And at some point, there has to come a time where we say enough is enough and make the transition that's needed, the transition that actually gives sovereignty to communities, that gives people freedom. It means you're less reliant on international markets. It's actually a better and more stable way of living. But for the companies themselves, there's less profits in it. So for them, the incentive isn't there as strong as it is for the actual people and communities. The profit lies at the moment in these fossil fuels, about making money for shareholders. The reason why we're so active in this space and the reason why we attend annual meetings, the reason why we work with communities and why we make resolutions at company board meetings and we speak with the companies is because there are underlying risks here to the profits that they're actually chasing in pursuing this. When the world is moving away from fossil fuels, but you've built a pipeline, which this is what, you know, APA's plans are, right? If these Beetaloo pipelines go ahead, they will run until 2070. Think about what the world is going to look like in 2070. Are we going to still be building fossil fuel infrastructure then? And so then there are all these other risks, right? It's something called a stranded asset risk. So if you pour billions and billions and billions of dollars into building these pipelines, billions of dollars of investors' monies, billions of dollars of your own company's money, right? Money you've got from loans, from banks, and you're pouring that into these pipelines that are not going to be making any money in 30 years, potentially, then those are enormous risks for investors. What happens to the actual asset that we've given you all this money for and that we've invested in? And that's even amplified by climate as well. Climate making conditions more difficult for even the pipeline to run, which how ironic is that, right?
Irony indeed. Angelica Manticus, talking about APA Group, the company that's planning pipelines in Australia's Northern Territory that would enable extensive gas fracking in the Beetaloo Basin. You're listening to Earth Matters, broadcast nationally across this continent via the Community Radio Network. Before we hear more about APA's gas pipelines and their impacts, I wanted to find out how Angelica Manticus came to be a high-level climate campaigner.
Angelica, you are quite a young person to be in such a position as a campaigner at Market Forces. Mm-hmm. Yet you have worked in climate action for quite a while now. I did have a look at your CV online. How and why did you become a climate campaigner?
Yeah, I grew up in Melbourne to a very Greek ethnic family. my dad was always outside growing tomatoes and, you know, forcing me to come pick weeds out of the garden. And, you know, my grandfather as well, like we're very much garden people. And so I grew up having a very close relationship with nature and understanding nature as something that you don't just take from or look at and say, oh, that's really pretty, but it actually gives us life. It gives us sustenance, and that especially it gives us that if we feed it and we take care of it too. And, you know, my family are from an island in Greece called Chios, and it's in like the northeast Aegean, close to Turkey. It's not a super touristy island, but we come from a farm there as well. So this farming idea is very much my background. There, it's quite a simple life. You don't need a lot. Community gathers together. They support each other. They care about each other. We sit under the stars and have dinner and laugh. And, you know, no one's super rich and throwing their money around everywhere. But we have love and we have a connection to nature. We have clean air. We can smell the breeze of the ocean and the smell of these special trees that only grow in Chios called mastic trees. We smell that, and it's our pride. It's our joy. And it's our pride and joy to have that nature thriving. And for me, when, you know, I grew up in Melbourne and I feel very lucky. I went to a good school and I learned about the climate crisis and I learned about all these environmental crises. And I just thought, this is insane that we have exploited the natural world so much that we are causing the destabilization of the entire system that we rely on for our own health. You know, without nature being in a stable state, we're at risk. Like it doesn't make sense even from that perspective, right? And so I just thought, like, Lord, what can I do? What can I do? I'm this one person. I grew up with a non-English speaking dad who has a very thick Greek accent and is always talking about his tomatoes all the time. Like, how can I bring my dad's tomatoes into this climate space somehow? And I think just realizing that the places that you love, that your ancestors going back thousands of years grew up from and lived off that land, those places are at risk, even if it might not feel like that right now, because that's the trend. And so protecting what we love is an obligation. It's not just a choice that we can make if we want to. It's a choice that we have to make because we need to. I started organizing in the youth climate space when I was a teenager, organizing climate protests and, you know, letter writing campaigns. You know, I really cared about human rights as well and gender equality and all sorts of things because these all intersect. And, you know, that took me to some crazy places. It took me to the United Nations space where I worked on UN climate talks for a while and getting impacted people from communities similar to my village in Greece that attending these big international spaces was not even on their radar. But that's, you know, where I thought the change was going to be made. Supporting communities to have their voices heard in the halls that will be making decisions that then impact them was a big part of my work. That's what drew me to working in these financial systems, was understanding how power works and the communities that deserve to be the ones holding that power. And so, yeah, I guess that's why I'm here. And yeah, it's just important to shift that power at a scale while staying grounded and focused in community.
Grounded and focused in community. I want to hear the story of the recent APA annual general meeting where you had one of these climate-related shareholder resolutions. What are these shareholder actions and resolutions all about? I've been actually quite interested in joining in myself.
Yeah, we'd love to have you join. Power to the people. So a lot of our work revolves around trying to actually shift the financial flows, the life support system of fossil fuels at Market Forces. So we went to the APA group, this big pipeline company's annual meeting. So every year they have a meeting and the board gathers and shareholders have a right to vote on different resolutions. Or if you have a big enough group of shareholders, you can actually propose your own resolution. What we did was we proposed two resolutions this year. So the first one was on climate, and it was actually quite a normal resolution. It wasn't asking for anything super crazy. All we were asking was for APA to show how they will measure emissions from these pipelines from the Beetaloo Basin. So all the emissions, including the end user emissions, or like when the gas is burnt, just show us how you're going to measure it. That's literally it, right? So it's not like we were asking for anything else, anything super crazy. We just asked for the measurement. That was the first one. And that actually got over 15% support from shareholders, which is pretty significant for a resolution that the board recommended people don't vote in favor of. And a resolution was on due diligence. So this was related to APA's partners in the Beetaloo Basin, essentially just asking APA to do their due diligence, do their research, do their homework on how these partners, Beetaloo Energy and Tamboran Resources in particular, are operating in the Beetaloo Basin. So telling them to do their homework on these toxic fracking spills that have happened, you know, on how consent has been given and gotten from traditional owners. There have been a lot of concerning incidents relating to these companies in just this exploratory phase. So those were our two resolutions, and we actually got significant backing from major global investors. So that included California's, I think it was the Public Service Fund and the New York City Pension Fund. We got support from investors totaling over $1.5 trillion in assets. So it shows that investors actually do want to see more disclosure. They want to see more transparency from these companies on the actual operation side, and as well as like the impacts on climate. And then they can make more informed investment decisions too, because it's a risk for them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing what market forces can achieve. I really like the idea of following the money. Money has power.
Exactly.
Anyway, last year there was a big campaign with health groups and scientists calling on the big superannuation fund UniSuper to use its influence as a major shareholder of APA to get the pipeline company to ditch its destructive pipelines. But this led to a speedy conclusion.
Yeah, exactly. It's really interesting. Last year, coalition of health organizations, scientists, concerned community members wrote to UniSuper, which was one of APA's largest shareholders. So they owned a significant amount of shares in APA. And they basically all wrote around concerns that these Beetaloo Basin fracking enabling pipelines are completely incompatible with a safe climate and with public health, right? Without a safe climate and public health, life's pretty difficult. So thousands and thousands of UniSuper members contacted the fund. They were asking it to use its influence as one of APA's biggest shareholders to influence APA from the inside to drop these pipelines. And essentially the end was UniSuper actually pulled out from APA. So they sold their stake in APA. You know, we made a lot of noise around this for quite a while. Lots of doctors, you know, thousands of them, concerned community members made noise, and one of APA's largest investors pulled out of the company. And APA has pushed ahead still with these Beetaloo plans anyway, but it's really important to show that investors can do something and that investors do feel pressure. UniSuper actually divested from APA because of the enormous pressure that was put on them.
Well, what do you want APA to do?
Yeah, great question. Huh. We want APA to essentially be really transparent with communities, with investors, with Australians, with people about the impacts of its pipelines. So that's the first thing. What are the real climate impact of these pipelines? The second thing is we want them to actually adopt a strategy. So they have a climate transition plan at the moment that claims that they're in alignment with the objectives of the Paris Agreement, basically meaning they're in alignment with this conclusion that we've all reached that we need to try and keep global warming well below 2 degrees and aim for 1.5. That's what they've stated through their goals, right? You can't do that whilst building massive pipelines that are unlocking over a billion tons of emissions.
Mm-hmm.
So we're simply asking APA to put its money where its mouth is, put its actions where its words are, and not invest and not enable these ginormous pipelines whilst claiming they're compatible with the Paris Agreement. APA actually does have a renewable energy division. They do run electricity transmission. They're not just like this single business that relies only on gas. they did and do have that opportunity to diversify. So it is a choice at the end of the day. And if enough pressure mounts, we hope that choice will be clearer for them.
Well, they sound like a very big company able to do things. It'd be good if they could do something that would be for the good of future generations.
Yeah.
And current ones.
And current ones.
Can you tell me about a couple of useful tools that market forces have for people who want to know how their banks and super funds are faring on climate action?
Absolutely. You can go to the Market Forces website. We have a banks comparison table and simple forms where you can see how much your bank has poured into fossil fuels. You can email your bank saying that you'll switch if they keep funding new coal, oil and gas. We had a new report come out yesterday saying Australia's banks have funded over $43 billion to fossil fuels. We also have a super funds table because your super funds may also be funding fossil fuels too. So there's a comparison table where you can figure out which super funds are still invested in fossil fuel expansions and which are shifting towards renewables. And you can email your fund, lodge complaints, or move to a more responsible option.
Angelica Manticus, thank you so much for talking.
So much always to chat about. Thanks so much for having me, Rebecca.
And all the best for your hopes on the future of speeding up the shift from gas and fossil fuels to clean energy.
Angelica Manticus from Market Forces, detailing the environmental, social and financial risks associated with APA proposed pipelines and Market Forces strategies to oppose it. And you can find the Market Forces site with those tools and lots of background information at www.marketforces.org.au, so you can make sure your money's being put to good use. You've been listening to Earth Matters, Community Radio's National Environment Justice Program. If you missed any of today's show, you can find our podcasts at 3cr.org.au/Earth Matters. Or if you're listening via iTunes or any other podcasting service, why not rate us and leave us a review and help spread the word. Earth Matters would like to thank the Community Broadcasting Foundation for their financial support and the Community Radio Network for getting the program out to you. Earth Matters is produced in the studios of 3CR on Wurundjeri country. If you'd like to get in contact, you can send us an email at earthmatters3cr@gmail.com or go to our Facebook page. I hope you can tune in next time for one more Earth Matters.